Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by only Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have some breaking news. I will cue the breaking news music. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. This is me shuffling papers around in the newsroom. So the breaking news, Piper, is that our good friend in radio, Ronald J. Martin, will be not only taking a sabbatical from his church, but also taking a sabbatical from this program until live in Louisville. So this was a resounding blow just throughout the radio community. Lots of shockwaves, and I'm still processing. I'm sure you are. I don't presume to speak for where you're at on this, Pipe. But do you have any thoughts? Any words for Ronald in this time? I don't know if he's sabbaticaling from even listening to the program.
Well, I believe he is, because when he surreptitiously got me this news, he made allusion to needing a complete and utter break from his electronic devices. So I believe that he's not going to listen to this, so we can say whatever we want. He's completely separate. This is a very telling thing about our day and age, because when he told me, and I'm sure our listeners are thinking the same thing, you know, and he used an excuse like, I need a total sabbatical. You know, I'm on the sabbatical, so I spent part of it doing it this way, and now I need to do part of it this way. All of that blank space just leaves room for the imagination to run as to what's really going on here. Like, did he get a better offer from another podcast? Is he planting another campus of his church? Like, what's the actual reason here? That was the question that goes through my mind. But I also believe, like, I probably have to trust what he says. I'm just not sure.
Pipe, just from a business standpoint, what do we do? What's our next move if he shows up on another podcast in the near future? How are we going to handle that internally as a company?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he needs to be on like podcast probation at this point, which means he's allowed back, but maybe like limited speaking capacity.
That's right. We'll put him on a word count, a pitch count.
Like a question count. Like, you're always teeing up questions, but, you know, you're like, I'm going to throw this one your way, Ron. But, like, Ron only gets one question per podcast if he decides to come back. Yep. Now, he swore up and down and forward and backwards that he would be back for Together for the Rant. Like, that was his – like, he's committed to that, blood, sweat, and tears, which is good to know. This is not a Stephen L. Trogi disappearing into rehab and then into the ether situation.
He's a public appearance guy. Ron puts on for public appearances. I mean, that's his thing. So I would be shocked if he didn't join us on stage at the Yum Center for Together for the Rant. But we will keep tabs on this, Piper, for the audience, because I'm sure they're going to have questions. It's natural for them to do so, and we will try our best to be as transparent as possible with the information that we have, which, to be honest, is not a lot at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, the only fear that I really have is that a three-person podcast depends on three unique personalities, and so, like, on the days when Ted shows up and just doesn't care, which does happen on occasion. Yeah. And by occasion, I mean half of our podcast.
Absolutely.
It's very helpful, because then Ronnie might bring a little extra energy, and I feel like a little bit of a burden in that instance. Or if Ronnie's feeling glum one day, then we need to bring the extra. But, like, when it's just two people, there's just an added amount of pressure. The dynamic changes. We'll see if we can pull this off.
Yeah, we sure will. And we may send him down to the minors for a little rehab assignment.
Is that like the gut check pod, or like El Trogi's pod?
Okay. Whatever Trogs is into this month, podcasting wise, we may send Ron down there to just kind of get his voice back, get his chops back for a couple of episodes until we bring him back up to the big leagues. You know?
Yeah, and you know Trogs would love that, because he would think he's getting a new host, only to realize that it's what they call a cup of coffee in the minors.
It's a cup of coffee. Ron would be having a cup of coffee and no more. But, dude, you know Trogs, his dream of dreams is to co-host a pod with Ron Martin, because I think there's some music industry man crush happening there. And Ron seems like the kind of music industry guy that Trogues feels like he could have access to. You know what I mean? It's kind of like if you were a little girl in the 80s or 90s, you would pick like the fat Backstreet Boy to have a crush on. I feel like that's the that's the equivalent of Trogues kind of having a crush on Ron.
Ronnie. Yeah, that's right. He's scrawny Ronnie, but he's also the fat Backstreet Boy.
He's the accessible one. You know what I mean? So I think I could see that. I could see a little rehab assignment with the Trogues podcast. But Piper, speaking of being glum, I have been unspeakably glum is too strong, but I've been really glum this week. So due to a variety of things, this has been a very glum week for me. And one of the things, though, that has brought me, again, joy is too strong of a word because I don't think I felt anything akin to joy all week. But one of the things that made me less glum. It is gloomy, but I'm about to turn it. I'm about to turn it around. One of the things that made me less glum was the absolute outpouring of love and attention and video clips of this skier, a half-pipe skier in the Olympics, who basically is doing the equivalent of what we talked about on the show last week when we talked about a figure skater skating glumly around in a circle. So this woman, her whole thing is, you know, half pipes, you're supposed to like get big air and do tricks and flip around in the air and whatnot. And her whole thing is just to go back and forth and not fall down. Am I right?
Yeah. She basically just, you know, she starts at the top of this, you know, it's a long downhill half pipe and they usually go back and forth with, like you said, the big air. And she just goes up one side and down and up the other side and down. And she just turns at the top and goes back down. I mean, it's like, it's like watching a screensaver, like an old school screensaver where the thing just sort of bounces around on your screen hypnotically. It is hypnotic.
Yes, it is hypnotic. And I absolutely love it. It's the most respectable Olympic thing I've seen in forever. I love how bold and forthcoming she is about it. And I think this woman is a hero because here's the thing. If you get fourth in half-pipe skiing, and let's be honest, even if you get first or second or third, everyone's forgotten your name in a week. It's nothing. It's not to diminish the accomplishment, but in the world's eyes, it's absolutely nothing. I think we're going to be talking about this woman for decades. I think that's how this is going to be an evergreen Olympic story that every 4 years is going to come back and be told, and I think she is a legend. So what's your name, Pipe? What's this girl's name that we're talking?
You know, 900 listeners who sent it in to me are yelling at me right now. I have no idea. Yeah. I didn't actually look. I only went because they were just like the overwhelming message that was sent to us is this is the thing that Ted was talking about. Like he wanted to see it. This is it. If only he was on Twitter to see this video. So you did see.
Dude,
the video.
I feel really loved by our listeners that they would remember and equate like that story with me. The fact that they're thinking about us after hours is very powerful, isn't it, Piper? Like they're sitting at home watching the Olympics going, yes, Ted would like this. Isn't that a warm feeling?
It is. It's almost like you were watching the Olympics with them, which is maybe the only way that watching the Olympics would be enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's maybe the only way that I would watch the Olympics because I would never actually watch it. So watching it kind of cosmically with them, it's enough. You know, it's enough for me because this story is really the only thing out of it that I would have wanted to see. So thank you to our listeners. Thank you to our listeners anyway, just for listening, for downloading every app, for being involved on Twitter, for buying your Together for the Rant tickets, which you should do if you haven't done so already at happyrantpodcast.com. Thank you to our listeners for drinking Lagares Roasters Happy Rant Signature Blend, a.k.a. the greatest coffee on the planet. So thank you for all of those things. And Pipe, we have some other ground to cover today. So you have viewed the movie Black Panther, and if you've been living under a rock, Black Panther is like the biggest cultural item. It's really kind of dwarfed the Olympics, I think, in terms of the amount of dialogue and kind of the crackle of excitement that surrounded this movie.
And there are some striking similarities in that there are
There's a lot of spandex in
there's,
both.
Yeah, there's a lot of bright costumes and tight costumes. Yep. There's a lot of American people being all geeked about people of other cultures. The only difference is that the Black Panther was awesome and the Winter Olympics suck. So, I mean, that would be the single biggest disparity.
That would be the one glaring difference.
Yeah. It's notable.
Piper, I'm fascinated by this movie, and I want to ask you several things about it. But one of the reasons I'm fascinated by it is that any story in our culture in which the agenda for the story is kind of set ahead of time, and I don't know if this was a brilliant turn of marketing on behalf of the people behind the Black Panther, or if it was just, you know, a kind of a lucky happenstance. But I feel like the narrative on this movie was set in stone, wherein even if it was a mediocre movie, you weren't allowed to say anything other than that was so great, that was so powerful. Now, I haven't seen the picture. And to be fair, I probably won't, not because I don't like it, but I don't get to the theater to see a lot of these comic book movies. So I want you to summarize the movie and then talk about why you loved it. And then I'll have some other questions for you.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the obligatory. There may be spoilers in this because that could happen. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to try not to give anything away. But like, if you want no discussion of it, well, good luck because it's everywhere. But I'm going to try not to ruin it. But to your point about like that it was set up to be a movie that you were sort of obliged to say it's powerful.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of comments by, you know, Black journalists and influencers and entertainers prior to the release that were addressing that very thing, and they were basically saying, "Man, I hope this is good." Like, they were super excited, but they were also super nervous because of the potential cultural impact of it if it was good.
Yeah.
And so the second thing about the hype of it is that hype tends to disappoint always.
Yeah.
You know, so like the last Star Wars movie was a good instance. Like, if there had been no hype about that, I would have thought it was a pretty fun movie. Because of all the hype, I was like, it was disappointing, which I don't think was entirely fair. But
right.
I felt like this one lived up to the hype across the board. I thought
– interesting.
I mean, I'm inclined to like the Marvel movies. I enjoy those. I'm not a comic book nerd. Like, I've never read comic books. But in terms of the movies, I've seen them all. I've enjoyed them all kind of for what they are. And this was the best one. I think as a movie, like if this was not part of a universe – If it wasn't part of like this grander story, it was just a standalone movie. It was just really good. The performances were great. The writing was great. The artistry of film, like it was a big budget film, and they used the budget well. It didn't feel sort of bloated and you know, Michael Bay-ish.
Go ahead.
Well, and the other thing was it. I have to be careful how I say this, but I think I'm just, you know, being a white guy, I have to be careful. I forgot that I was watching a movie in which there were almost no white characters.
Okay.
It felt to me like just watching an exceptional film. I do believe that if you were a Black person watching that movie, you never forgot that everybody on the screen looked like you. And some of the most powerful responses I've seen have been people saying essentially that. Like, this is the first Hollywood blockbuster that they've ever seen where literally every single major character is Black. And there's a couple white characters, but they're really more like – they're like the goofy sidekicks. They're not the main – they're not the main characters. So – my overall take was it lived up to the hype. It is a cultural phenomenon, and it was as powerful as one would hope it would be, and it didn't disappoint on that front either.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It occurs to me that – so a movie that came out like 6 months ago that a lot of people didn't see and the people that saw it didn't like it, it was Detroit. Do you remember this movie?
I didn't see it, but I know what it is. I know of it.
Yeah, it was really gritty, really tough. It was about race riots in Detroit, and it was a race movie, right? It was a social conscience type movie that I think wanted to generate all of the kind of positive energy that Black Panther generated, but failed to do so for a variety of reasons. But the fact that, you know, Black Panther was able to garner that kind of energy, I think it's just powered it through the whole thing. Well,
what Black Panther did, I mean, thinking about it versus Detroit, knowing what that movie was, or a movie like Fruitvale Station from a few years ago and some of those, is that those are racial conflict movies. So they're drawing attention to the inequalities and the injustices, very pronounced injustices. And Black Panther flipped the script. And it essentially said, this is the entire thing is really, I mean, not the entire thing, but the majority of it is set in a country in Africa that is the most high powered and wealthy country that nobody knows about because they've kept it a secret. And so it creates an alternate reality in ours that opens the eyes to what could be. That I think that was the most powerful aspect is like, oh, this could be. And yes, it's a superhero movie, so there are going to be people who scoff at that. But that was the spirit of it. So instead of saying, look at what's broken, it was saying, look at the possibilities. Look at the brilliance and the power and the strength and dignity of people who have basically been spit on for hundreds of years in our actual society.
Yeah, it's a fascinating premise. And it begs the question, what do you think will come after it? Do you think we'll see a similar kind of model happening in big budget, wide release Hollywood pictures?
Well, I mean, I saw a statistic that just showed that the, in recent releases, the last year or so, there have been a series of really successful movies directed by and starring either minorities or women. Which is not a historical Hollywood trend. And basically the person who posted it was just like, I hope Hollywood gets a clue that these are movies that resonate with people and there's a market for them. And I have to say, it's refreshing to go see because like one of the previews for this one was another Mission Impossible movie. Like watching old Tom Cruise hang from rocks and run really fast. Like, it's boring. It's just boring.
Dude, Russell, it so is.
Russell Crowe is boring. Ryan Gosling is boring. Like – These are boring actors, whereas this whole reality was like – it felt like it was opening a door not just into the world of the film itself but like into the world for Hollywood to do some actual creative things for the first time in a decade and a half.
Dude, that whole Mission Impossible franchise to me is the most boring thing. And for some reason, I always get roped into watching those movies and I always expect to feel something other than what I end up feeling when I watch the movie, which is just that I've wasted 2 hours and I'm bored.
They're like a crappy American James Bond, and James Bond is already pretty lowbrow.
Crappy. Yeah.
I enjoy the Daniel Craig James Bond movies, but like the Mission Impossible ones are like that without any British accents, without any class, with crummier gadgets, and with worse acting. Like literally everything about them is worse, and yet they still keep cranking them out.
Dude, I always get excited to watch the James Bond movies, and then invariably every time I watch one, like 20 minutes into it, I'm like checking my phone or reading or like multitasking in some other way. And I'm like, this thing can't even hold my attention. It's like a 2.5 hour television show that's not that great. That's how these movies come off. But that's super interesting, Pipe. I may have to see Black Panther. Only on the strength of your recommendation, I've heard across the board from everybody that I respect, like that it's a truly great movie.
And the thing is, I think you should go see it, not thinking of it as like part of this Marvel universe, Marvel series, but to go see it and say, just like you as a film enjoyer and critic and student, like what do you think of it in terms of storytelling and acting and then just kind of all the aspects we just talked about? I'd be fascinated to hear what you have to say.
Who's the main guy in it? Is it Michael B. Jordan?
He is the main villain.
Okay.
Chadwick Boseman, I think is his name.
Okay.
He's the guy who played Jackie Robinson in the movie 42.
Yeah.
He played he has played a whole bunch of like seminal black characters in recent years.
Yeah.
None of which have been as commercially successful as this one though.
Those are both super cool looking guys.
Yes.
If it's not weird for me to say that.
No, they're handsome devils, and they're both really talented.
I think growing up as a white athlete in the Midwest, I always had the sense that like black guys looked way cooler than us in general. And
especially for those of us who were involved in the world of sports, like we just not only did they look way cooler, they were just better than us.
Exactly, And I think deep down, I still probably think that. Like, I was watching a movie with Mos Def in it, and I was like, oh, man, I wish I looked like Mos Def, you know, which will never be a thing for me, if you know what I look like.
But what you're talking about, though, is part of the reason this movie is so cool, because in most movies, that character is like – they're like the splash of color in an otherwise like sure. –
Yeah.
It's a beige film with one cool character or one character who's like – it's the sort of the tokenism in Hollywood, whereas this movie is entirely made up of that, of people who are exceptionally cool, exceptionally talented, exceptionally good-looking, exceptionally like just brilliant kind of across the board. And, you know, they each play their own unique characters, and so there's villains and dummies and whatever else. But like that's the whole movie. It's not like the one guy mixed in with your, you know, generic group of white folks.
Yeah. Interesting. Pipe, I'm going way off script here, but this is something I think we alluded to via text, but we never fleshed out on the program. Have we talked about why 42 didn't exactly work as a baseball movie?
I know that we've texted about it. I don't know that we've ever brought it up here.
First of all, did you like that movie?
I wanted to like that movie because Jackie Robinson, like, I don't have many people who I would rate as heroes in my life.
Yeah.
But he is somebody I go back to time and again as just somebody who is just – he's like a gravitational pull for me in books about him, films about him, whatever it is.
Phenomenal story.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just an unbelievable character in real life and an unbelievable – I watched the movie recently. I hadn't seen it in the year since it came out. And I watched it recently. It was pretty long. It was about 2.5 hours. And it occurred to me that that movie failed in the same way that a lot of Christian movies fail, in that I think it started with a message, the message being racism is bad. Mm-hmm. And it built the movie around that rather than just building it around a super compelling character and telling a great story. It's hard for me to not like a baseball movie. Like, I'm predisposed to being romantic about baseball and liking almost every baseball movie. But this one was a tough hang for me.
I'm a harsh judge of baseball movies because I played a lot of baseball, and like just the game itself, it is usually pretty badly portrayed. I will say that the baseball in that movie was done pretty well. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Like Bozeman's portrayal of Robinson on the field was really good. And I heard an interview with him where he talked about that. Like, he went back and studied as much game film of Robinson as he could to figure out mannerisms and even like how he slid. And there was an instance where he went in and corrected the stunt double who was doing something because he said, no, Robinson never slid like that. He always slid on his right side or whatever it was. Uh-huh. So, I mean, like that kind of stuff made me like it more in retrospect. But yeah, it also felt very like Remember the Titans.
Which was a football movie I didn't like for the same reason.
When you start with the moral of the story and you work your way backwards to build the narrative, it's not as good. Whereas like Jackie Robinson is, if they had made it just more of like a biopic,
I think it could have
worked because Bozeman's really good and Robinson's really compelling. And the story is like, it's been told and it remains one of the most significant stories in American sports history. So
The whole time I was watching it, I was just like, I wish a real filmmaker had done this. Like, if Ryan Coogler could do that, I'm sure it would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see like his interpretation of Jackie Robinson. I'm sure it'd be unbelievable. But I think The Blind Side was another one like that, where I just felt like I was getting this heavy handed sermon, you know, that was kind of syrupy through the whole thing.
I think all those are Disney movies. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think they are.
But I mean, that's like the Disney family thing is like it is like a Christian movie, sort of moralistic.
Very heavy handed, like social message. I really dislike movies that do that. And I think maybe like deep down, I was worried that Black Panther would do that. But from everything I've read and heard, it sounds like it doesn't, which is pretty great. Pipe, I need your help with something and I need your advice on something. I have this phenomenon in my life where I'm a relentless people pleaser and I have trouble saying no to anything, such that whenever anyone invites me for coffee or a meal, or any other context, which I don't want to do, which is most things, I really have a lot of trouble saying no. So the question is, when you get coffee or meal invitations from people you don't want to hang with, or people who just reach out to quote unquote connect, which is a thing that happens a lot in our business.
Yes.
I just want to connect, man, the guy who's got the book idea. He wants to lay it on you over coffee. What do you do when that happens? Because here's what I do. I say yes to all of it, and I end up resenting a good 2/3 of it at least, which is not a good way to live, like full of resentment and just fatigue. So how do you deal with that?
Depends on how the invitation comes in. Like if somebody does the open-ended, like, man, we should grab coffee sometime, I'm just like, yeah, okay. And then I will never take initiative on that. If it's somebody who's just trying to connect. If somebody kind of in person, or somebody who I cross paths with is like, can you grab coffee this Thursday? I basically just set the parameters for myself. It's like, I'll do coffee with anybody once, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just sort of, it's an hour that I'm going to pull out of my wallet and I'm going to spend, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe something good will come out of it. Maybe it won't. But like, it's just trying to set that bar real low, because then you don't get as frustrated. And, you know, instead of spending that hour thinking of all the other things I could be doing, I'm just like, you know what? It's fine, you know?
Yeah.
If it's an online thing, like there's a guy who hit me up on Twitter a while back and was just like, hey, can you follow me back so I can send you a direct message? And I was like, this is not going to go well. But I can't publicly tell a guy no.
Yeah.
You know? And I felt like blowing him off would be rude. And so essentially he cornered me into doing a polite thing. And so I followed him back and was like, yeah, fire away. And then he just sent me this message that was like, I see that you like – you know, you work in publishing and podcasting. I just want to connect. And like, that was the message.
That was a lot of buildup for that.
I know. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I didn't even respond because I was like, I believe this direct message counts as connecting then. But then he followed it up with just a kind of, several days later, with just like some open-ended questions. It's like, hey, what do you think about this? And I'm like, you know what? I don't have time for this. I don't have time to just sort of be your sounding board on ideas. And that thing is the tension that I feel is I feel guilty thinking that my time is more important than their questions.
Yeah.
But I also feel like if I was in his shoes, I would never do what he's doing.
Yeah. And I never did do it. And I don't know how you were like coming up in the business, but it never occurred to me to like go to coffee with a bunch of people and see what kind of connections I could make. And maybe it would have worked out better for me if I had. I don't know. Maybe I would be like further along than I am. But
Playing that game does get you ahead in the world, because as those people, like as this guy exemplified, if you ask, it's very hard for people to say no. You know, like it's
I guess the thing about me though is I never wanted anyone to like begrudgingly say yes to me. Like I've always wanted people to want to have coffee with me and not just like say yes out of obligation like I do 2/3 of the time.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. I just don't want people to feel that way about me.
I can only remember one instance where I reached out to somebody. He was an author who I respected and liked a lot, who was coming to town for an event. And I'd had some interactions with him in the past about some other publications that, you know, asking for endorsements, things like that. And so I reached out to him and just said, hey, I see you're going to be in town. Do you want to grab coffee or a drink or something like that? And he said, yes, I think because I asked. And then I went and met him. And like after we were, you know, kind of chit chatting for the first 30 minutes, he just looked at me and goes, what do you really want?
Oh, wow.
Which
that's bold.
Which I loved, because like he completely turned the tables on me and was just like, so what's the ulterior motive? Like nobody just wants to connect. And I told him,
why are we doing this?
Right. And I told him, I said, actually, it is just because I enjoy your writing. We've interacted. You were kind enough to write this thing on my behalf. And I just, you know, just kind of I wanted to essentially befriend you. At a casual level, like with no expectation that I'm going to like text you hereafter. And then we proceeded to hang out for another like hour and a half, 2 hours, and it was no big deal. But I kind of love that where he's like, what do you want?
Dude, I love that too. I respect that. That's what you're describing is almost like a weird male dating scenario, you know, in which like you,
it was like a defining the relationship 30 minutes.
Dude, it was a defining the relationship. Like you want to be friends with somebody. I don't think I've ever done that necessarily, but I had one of those in grad school where we had a visiting writer. His name's Andre Debuse. He wrote a novel called The House of Sand and Fog that was made into a movie that got really successful a few years ago. And he had written a memoir I really liked about fighting called Townie. And we ended up like talking after his talk, and we ended up like going out together that night in Ashland, Ohio. And he almost like got us into a fight at one of these like John Deere hat type bars. And, you know, it was a good moment, but yeah, the understanding was never like, so I'm going to text you and make sure you got home okay afterward or whatever. So, one of the worst ones of these I've ever had, Pipe. And sadly I have several, you know, these things going bad stories. So a guy reached out to me, this was many years ago in Michigan. And, you know, I'd written several books and I'd written several Christian books. The KDY stuff had happened. And, this dude reached out to me who was in, like the marketing into the publishing industry in Grand Rapids, but he was going independent. Like he was starting his own, you know, book marketing company or whatever.
Oh, just as a general rule, avoid people who are going independent.
Dude, exactly. That was my first red flag. And going independent usually means I was laid off or fired. That's the subtext.
Or I'm a pain in the, you know what to work with. So yeah. If I'm not getting fired, nobody likes me.
So here's how this thing went down. He goes, you know what? I'd love to meet up with you and just pick your brain. Pick your brain is a big buzzword. That's another red flag. But he goes, I'd love to just pick your brain about some publishing industry stuff. And he's like, you know what? Why don't I take you to breakfast? And I'm like, you know what? I got to eat anyway. That's fine. Mm-hmm. So I hit him back and I'm like, where would you like to meet up? Just pick a place and I'll meet you there. And he texts back and he goes, how about Burger King? And I'm just like, is there a sadder place on the planet to have breakfast than a Burger King?
I mean, like if he had said, if he had said Waffle House, I mean, I don't know if they have Waffle House.
I can get behind Waffle House though.
Like, yeah, but like Waffle House is like, okay, he's starting up. Yeah. Like he's trying to keep business expenses to a minimum, but at least like they serve breakfast. Like Burger King doesn't serve breakfast. Burger King serves the same crap they do at lunch. They just do pork instead of beef.
Yeah, they just put it on like a croissant instead of a bun, and it's the same stuff. Dude, so we meet at the sad Burger King off the highway, and, you know, we're talking, and it's it comes time to order, and he, like, pays for his thing, and then I step up, and it occurs to me that, like, we're paying for our own stuff, you know, that he wasn't, in fact, getting me breakfast, that whatever sad, like, Burger King sandwich I was eating at the moment, I was financing it myself. And it was just like a profoundly sad moment where it's like, here we both are sitting with our trays of sad food talking about sad publishing industry stuff. And I was just like, oh, I wish I'd said no, you know?
Yeah.
I wish I could learn. I wish I had the equipment inside of me and my psyche to say no to people.
Yeah, it wasn't that kind of experience, but it was the one that stands out in my mind as the most like, what is going on here? So working in the social media marketing realm, like there's a ton of like independent social media marketer connector types. And they're inherently untrustworthy and always selling and just generally kind of overly energetic. So this guy hits me up.
Like energetic dirtbags.
It's like used car salesmany, you know, from just with a lot of Facebook metrics instead of 8-cylinder engines.
Exactly.
And so this guy hits me up via email and he says, hey, see that you're in the same industry. I've worked on some projects that are similar to some of these things. And he sends me his website with all these projects. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. He's like, I would love to get together and just sort of bounce ideas off you. I think he avoided using the phrase pick your brain, but just sort of like, you know, just sort of like share ideas. And I'm like, again, this is that hour. That's what's in my mind. So then he's like, my assistant will set something up. And I'm like, this is interesting because I'm pretty sure it was a virtual assistant who lives in like Mumbai.
Bangladesh.
So then they send me a link to this app called Calendly, which is where you can like set up scheduling. People use it for scheduling podcasts and whatever, but it's weird when you're just trying to get coffee with somebody. So I click on it and I'm like, okay, everything about this feels a little bit odd. I get there. Everything is in 15-minute slots.
Yep.
So he's like, I can meet you at this coffee shop for 15 minutes. And
does this guy live in Nashville?
He does.
I think it's the same guy. I think I've had coffee with that guy too.
Okay. I did not have coffee. I emailed back and I said, it takes me 11 minutes to get to that coffee shop. If we're going to get together, I would need at least an hour of your time for it to be worth it.
And, yeah, we're not doing and that was minutes. The end.
Yeah, I was like 50, like, I don't 15 minutes is a stand-up meeting at work, and it's a fruitful conversation where you're trying to like solve a problem or clarify an issue. You don't bounce ideas off people for 15 minutes at a coffee shop on the other side of town.
Like, dude, where it takes 15 minutes to find a parking space.
Yeah. And $7. Like, I really wanted to just rip him apart for that one and be like, you know, this is a really terrible way to treat people, right? Like, this doesn't create a good impression of you.
Just a bad look.
And I just said, sorry, it's not worth it. And I wish I would do that more often, but I only do that when people really rub me the wrong direction.
Dude, you mentioned the personal assistant thing. Can I share like a triumph that happened just today?
Since it's a glum week, I think you should share all your triumphs.
Dude, yeah. Well, I have one triumph from this week.
Fair
enough. And it happened today, and I'm going to share it. So that's it.
That's sadly. All of them. But, all right.
So this we just hired a new administrative assistant for our office, for our little group, our department of of professors. And I have a weird thing where, in addition to not being able to say no, I have a hard time asking people to do stuff for me. And so the whole concept of having like an assistant to like make copies or do things that I could do, but I'm just asking her to do it. Like, it's always been really weird for me. So without like belaboring the details, I had a scenario in which I went to a Walmart yesterday, which is the saddest place on earth. And I was trying to buy even sadder than Burger King breakfast. I was trying to buy like a burner phone for my 15-year-old son so that he could, cause he dropped his other one in the toilet or whatever. And, trying to buy a burner phone at Walmart might be the saddest like sentence I've ever said out loud. But suffice to say, I purchased it. There was a problem with it. They didn't scan it correctly. So the guy from the phone company was like, you're going to have to go back in and like get that rescanned. And the idea of doing that, Piper, just devastated me. Like, it was more than I could handle today. Like, I was just literally like, I don't think I can do it. You know, I don't think I can drag myself back in there to have this sad like 30-minute ordeal. So my assistant overheard me having that conversation with the phone guy, and she was like, what if I went and did that for you? And I was like, or no, I asked her, and she was like, I was gonna ask you. And she was like, I love doing stuff like that, so I'll take it, I'll go. And lo and behold, she came back like an hour later with the problem totally solved.
What?
And I feel like it
that's amazing.
Dude, I feel like it's changed my life, literally. It was like it was probably the coolest thing that's happened to me in 2 weeks.
I mean,
it was amazing.
I don't understand the phrase, I love doing things like that.
I didn't either. So I pressed her on that a little bit, and she was like, I just like doing tasks that have an outcome. And I felt like this is the last kind of task I want to do. So if you like doing that, then God bless you. Knock yourself out. So she did it, and the problem solved, and I avoided another trip to Walmart, which just for me feels like a towering achievement. I just feel like I've won at life today, you know?
Yeah, I think I go to Walmart like twice a year out of usually sheer necessity. It's like I'm out of 9-volt batteries and my smoke alarm is just beeping incessantly, and it's like the one place that's open or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that scenario. It's never anything else.
No, I mean it's a necessity only kind of place. And the idea of going there like two times in 2 days was just more than I could bear.
That's 2 years worth of Walmart.
Yeah. So Sid, if you're listening, thank you for going to Walmart. And she's a fan of the show, actually. She listens every week. So thank you for listening as well. Pipe, we've pretty much exhausted this thing, man. We've wandered to and fro throughout this ep. What did it feel like for you recording without Ron and realizing that we're going to be in a Ron-less environment for the next couple of months at least?
I have mixed feelings. I feel like, you know, I really would have liked Ron's input on, especially on the people just trying to connect and the coffee thing. I realized that, like, because it's always fun when you put a pastor in a position to say negative things about people that they know.
I feel like getting coffee with people is his life.
And I'm certain that he doesn't want to get coffee with at least half those people. I wish we could have put him in a spot to try to shimmy out of that, because he's really good at it and it's fun to observe. But I also,
dude, it's fun to watch him finagle his way out of uncomfortable questions. That in and of itself is like I don't know. It's hard, man, because
yes, exactly. It's hard, man, because is perfect. But I also feel good because I feel like we can do it. Like we did it. Yeah. And we can do it for a few more weeks and then Ron will be back. And so this tells me that we can stand on our own 4 feet. We don't need the fifth and sixth feet.
Yeah, we're adults. We're radio adults. We can handle this on our own. Pipe, I'm going to leave you with one last sad story of somebody wanting to connect. So this was also in West Michigan. This was a few years ago, and Zach Bartles and myself had written a book called The Christian Gentleman's Smoking Companion, and we had a guy reach out to us, and he said, you know, I'm doing this event. And I would love for you guys to bring a case of books and sign them and talk about the books a little bit. And, you know, we'll have food, we'll have barbecue, we'll have cigars. It'll just be a great night. And I'm like, wow, well, that sounds good. You know, it's hard to say no to that.
Right.
So Zach and I piled in a car and made the drive out there. It was about an hour and a half with a case of books. And we showed up and it was at this guy's house. And we went to the front door and the wife was sort of like, you know, yeah, they're out back. And I was like, huh, that's strange. So we walk through like their living room with, you know, baskets of their laundry on the floor and you know, house stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we go out back and there's this random assortment of like middle-aged men and none of them greet us and none of them look up. And, you know, eventually a guy makes his way over and he was like the host of the thing. And he shakes our hand and he's like, well, there's barbecue over there. You guys help yourselves to whatever you want. And so Zach and I sat down and we were like, this is it. This is the thing. And, you know, it was horrible. And we made awkward chit chat with a couple of these guys. And about 15 minutes in, I start texting Zach like, baby, you got to get me the blank out of Dodge. Right. Like,
yes,
I hate this. I want to die. You know, blah, 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 blah. I'm being real extra, man, real over the top via text. And he was feeling me. He understood. And so we finally get the main guy to like introduce us and he butchers my name. Right. And in the name was on the front of the book. It was on the cover. Yeah. So he forgets name.
I can understand mispronouncing like Bartles as like Bartels or something, but like Ted Cluck. That's literally a name that's written into like kids' books for like See Jane Run, See Ted Climb. Like this is really straightforward.
Dude, it's like it's two syllables all together. You know, it's not that hard. So he introduces us. We sell Barnabas one copy of the book. Like one guy buys one book for the whole night. And then finally I go up to the guy. I'm like, look, we got to go. We got this thing we got to do and we got to go. And he's like, well, I'm sorry, you know, more guys didn't buy books. And then he did the evangelical thing where he put his hand on our shoulder, on my shoulder. And he was like, you know, let me take the rest of these books and I will covenant to get the word out about this. And in our minds, we were like, oh, great. He's going to buy the rest of the inventory, right? He's going to pay us for all these books. And so he took the box of books. But then it occurred to us that he was, in fact, not going to buy any of them. And we had just like we'd been bookjacked basically, and we'd lost hundreds of dollars that evening.
All for the price of really bad conversation.
All for the really really sad conversation. And then finally we were like, okay, we're gonna leave. And he goes, if you guys could just walk around the outside of the house when you go, we just had our carpets cleaned, so you know we don't want to. So we make this walk of shame like around the gutters, around the side of the house, over like the kids' t-ball stuff. It was horrible. Dude, I was so mad. I don't think I've ever sworn more in my life than I did on that ride.
That's terrible. The audacity of people is astounding to me because you got conned. You got played out of a box of books.
We got jacked, man.
Like, because the only way to get those books back with you would have been to essentially pick a fight.
Yes.
And be like, either say no or say, are you going to pay for those? But you're in the man's home.
That's right. Yeah. So part of my hatred on the way home was like self-hatred. You know what I mean? Like, I was mad at him, but I was really mad at myself.
Yes.
For not saying no on the front end and then not demanding the money for the books. I just, there was a lot of loathing going around that evening.
Oh, that story takes the cake. That's amazing. I mean, I have a knot in my stomach just imagining being there and having to deal with that.
Dude, exactly. And then dealing with it with Zach Bartels, who's also like a little bit of a rageaholic as well. It was just classic. It was fascinating.
Did he behave himself?
He did. The thing about Zach is he very much behaves himself in person. Like, the only persona that you get to see of Zach is this kind of this internet persona, which is very different from the real persona. So, he behaved himself. He probably behaved himself more than me, but I think we behaved ourselves at a similar level that night, but we were both pretty, pretty wounded by the whole thing. So
That's awful. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing though.
It is, dude. It is. It's amazingly awful. Well, Pipe, we have done what we often do, which is wander to and fro throughout this program. Big R, if you're listening, I know you're not, but if you are, we miss you. And until next time, until Live in Louie for Big R, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.